The following program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Community News, covering the towns of Fitchburg, Leominster, Lancaster, Lunenburg, Townsend, Ashby, Ashburnham, Devons, Westminster, Shirley, and Groton. This program is made possible in part by a grant from the Community Foundation of North Central Massachusetts and the Lions Clubs of Fitchburg and Lunenburg, and thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. During the next hour, we'll be reading from the Sentinel and Enterprise newspaper. This is Priscilla Lanigan, along with Stacey Lanier, reading to you live from the Patricia A. Fletcher Studio at Audio Journal in Worcester, Massachusetts. Okay, we'll start out with a positive article. This is from Fitchburg. Sense of community. Fitchburg places in national recycling race. The city placed in the National Recreation and Park Association's 2026 recycling race, earning gold and silver recycling ranger badges. Fitchburg came in first in the cleanup category with 15,030 pounds of litter collected this spring and landed in second place in the most Agents of Discovery missions completed category with 5 missions played. City of Fitchburg Parks and Recreation Director James Bunnell, who has been in his role for 4 years, said the inspiration behind entering the race comes from his own experience working with people who care as much about the city as he does. The city does a tremendous job with the ward cleanups, and so many groups reach out to help clean up the parks. I thought it was only fitting to enter and see how we stack up against the rest of the country, he said. The NRPA recognition reflects the commitment of local officials and community members who help make recycling and picking up trash a priority across city parks and facilities, not only during Earth Month in April, but year-round. It takes everyone to keep our city and green spaces beautiful, Bunnell said. When officials and neighbors team up to clean and recycle, it builds a stronger sense of community. It proves that when we pitch in together, we can make a massive, visible difference right in our own backyards. Okay. And from Lancaster, give something back. Lancaster Scout builds guitar rack for Eagle Scout Project. On Friday, May 8th, Luther Burbank Middle School Music Department in Lancaster received a gift that will support the music program for many years to come. Ben Shepard, a 17-year-old junior at Neshoba Regional High School, an Eagle Scout candidate, presented the music department with 2 guitar racks with storage space for a total of 32 guitars. Shepard is a member of Scouts BSA's Troop No. 1 in Lancaster. He built the racks as his Eagle Scout service project. I got a lot out of the music program here at Luther Burbank, and I wanted to give something back, said Shepard. The racks are made from beautiful cherry wood, thoroughly planed and sanded, and protected with 12 coats of finish. The project took over 200 total hours to complete and involved the work of 7 scouts and several adult advisors. After selecting his project, Shepard needed an advisor who could help him learn the skills needed to complete the project. The troop was fortunate to find Chris Cullen of Leominster. Chris is a talented woodworker who also earned his Eagle Scout as a youth. I learned so much from Chris, said Shepard. We started with a pile of rough sawed boards and ended up with a beautiful piece of furniture. I couldn't have done it without his guidance. Shepard currently plays the tuba in the Neshoba Band and is also a member of several choral ensembles. Eagle Scout is the highest rank attainable in Scouts BSA program. To achieve the rank of Scout, the scout must plan, develop, and lead a major service project that benefits their community or school. I guess he did. And let's see from Leominster. Health Alliance Clinton Hospital earns A safety grade from LeapFrog. This from Leominster. Health Alliance Clinton Hospital announced in May that the hospital received an A hospital safety grade from the LeapFrog Group, an independent national nonprofit watchdog focused on patient safety. According to a press release from UMass Memorial Health, the A grade reflected 3 years of sustained work at the hospital to strengthen strengthen quality and safety by building and empowering clinical teams to lead improvements based on what they hear directly from patients. This work was embedded in daily operations with structured, frequent reviews of safety concerns, quality metrics, and outcomes at every level. Health Alliance Clinton Hospital has campuses in Leominster, Fitchburg, and Clinton. We are balancing quality, safety, and experience while we're building an army of patient-focused, person-centered caregivers who seek out opportunity to improve at every turn, said Dr. Cavanaro. The Leapfrog Hospital's safety grade panel uses multiple evidence-based measures of patient safety. Leapfrog then calculates a specific numerical score for all eligible hospitals in the country, which is then converted into one of five letter grades, with A representing the best. Grades are updated twice annually in the fall and spring. Okay. And from Fitchburg, Rollstone Bank commits $100,000 to Fitchburg Art Museum, ensures free admission through 2029. Wow. Rollstone Bank and Trust recently announced a $100,000 sponsorship of the Fitchburg Art Museum. The gift will ensure that every visitor to FAM can experience the museum free of charge through 2029, the final year of FAM's centennial celebration. Rollstone Bank has been part of this community for 180 years and supporting the Fitchburg Art Museum's mission to make art accessible to everyone is exactly the kind of investment we believe in, said Rollstone President and COO Mary Beth Jokola. As both FAM and Rollstone mark milestone anniversaries, we are proud to open the museum's doors free of charge to every family, student, and neighbor in our region. Art and culture are at the heart of a thriving community, and we are honored to play a role in FAM's next century. FAM Director Nick Capasso recently expressed deep gratitude for the partnership. The museum, founded in 1925 and the only art museum in North Central Massachusetts, currently serves approximately 14,000 visitors annually. With free admission now in place, FAM expects that number to grow significantly during the centennial period, running from 2026 through 2029, as all financial barriers to attendance are removed. The Fitchburg Art Museum's new free admission policy is based on the strongly held belief that a community-oriented art museum should work to make our mission and programs as accessible as possible to everyone, just like public libraries, said Capasso. Rollstone Bank has been a longtime corporate member and community partner. Together, we are thrilled to offer this special gift to our community to celebrate our institutional anniversaries. Prior to the launch of the free admission program, roughly 45% of visitors were already admitted through free various categorical programs. Rollstone's sponsorship replaces that complexity with a single, unambiguous commitment to universal access, one consistent with both institutions' deep roots in Fitchburg and North Central Massachusetts. As the exclusive sponsor of the Free Admission for All program, Rollstone Bank and Trust will recognize across FAM's website, print materials, social media, lobby signage, and at public events through 2029, and will receive corporate membership benefits at the patron level for the duration of the sponsorship. The Fitchburg Art Museum's centennial celebration will feature major exhibitions, special programming, and community events, including the current festival, a celebration of African art, and Kaleidoscope, 100 Years of Collecting for Our Community. Oh, sounds like fun. Okay, here's from Ashburnham, Oakmont High School Journalism Shines. Students honored at New England Scholastic Press Association. As I said, from Ashburnham. More than 450 student journalists from around New England gathered at Boston University College of Communication on May 1st for the 2026 New England Scholastic Press Association, or NESPA, NESPA, Spring Conference. Among the multitude of young writers in attendance were 20 staff members from the Oak Monitor, Oakmont Regional High School's student publication. The seniors presented at, contributed to, and co-won the All New England Publication Website Second Place Award at the large gathering, a feat with which they are thrilled. Given the business of journalism and the constant struggles of the field, it is inspiring to know that journalism is alive and well in New England and at high schools like Oakmont, said Mark Navard, who teaches English and journalism at the high school in Ashburnham and is also advisor for the Oak Monitor, the forum, Oakmont's annual literary and art publication, and the school's creative writing club. In addition to these members of the Oak Monitor crew taking home the honor mentioned above, co-editor-in-chief Reagan Bouchard, Weston Sinclair, Michaela Gronke, and Caitlin Renda, along with Navard, Bouchard was the Massachusetts Journalist of the Year runner-up. Ella Bebo Smith and Weston Sinclair each won two awards, and Brett Crossman and Megan Vance won apiece. From stumbling into freshman year not knowing I'd land on the Oak Monitor to presenting in front of a live audience at Boston University was truly shocking, Bouchard said. Sophomore year, we were the ones sitting in the audience scribbling down notes, and now we had advisors and students coming up to us asking questions. These past years of hard work and dedication have led our paper to grow so much in size and quality. I'm grateful to say I was part of the Oak Monitor's e-board, meeting the people we did and seizing the opportunities we had. She worked all through Christmas break and for days afterwards on her portfolio ahead of the prestigious conference. I did it thinking I probably wouldn't get any recognition. However, at that point, despite doubting my chances, I was proud of the work I had done, Bouchard said. Seeing most of it in one place like that, going back through things I created years ago, pictures I'd sent to friends, articles I had once edited, it showed me how much I accomplished. It reminded me that I can keep pushing, I can do the things I set my mind to, and I do have the ability to succeed. I'm honored to be a part of this year's All New England staff and to be named Massachusetts Journalist of the Year runner-up and all the opportunities that come along with it. Okay. Navard said the hard-working newspaper staff that includes close to 30 seniors has learned from the graduated staff members and enhanced the Oak Monitor in so many ways, reorganizing e-board staff, adding sections, and mentoring younger staff with professionalism and kindness. They embrace the daily grind of finding, reporting, and accurately publishing so much news on a professional website, the longtime educator said. I've learned so much from them. So many have found their niche and have become knowledgeable resources in their roles. Hard work and passion have led to results and inspired underclassmen to follow them. Established in 1961 and online since 2018, the Oak Monitor has some impressive stats. Since September 1, 2025, there have been over 130,000 visitors to the website and 390 stories posted by 80 staff members, 28 of those seniors. Navard has been teaching at the high school that serves the towns of Ashburnham and Westminster since 1997 and took over the role of the Oak Monitor advisor in 2012. Our student newspaper and journalism program are thriving, he reported, adding that the Oak Monitor's Instagram following has more than doubled just over the last 3 months, thanks to the efforts of Bebo Smith and Crossman. Navard went on to say that at Oakmont, they are fortunate to run at least two full-course English electives each year for grades 9 through 12. It is a course based on learning journalism, ethics, writing mechanics, and article and publication critiques, Navard continued. Our administration and staff are incredibly supportive, always making time to interview, share, and educate our student journalists. We need educated local sources who are willing to share their expertise, and our community certainly is here to help. The school has been represented at the NESPA Spring Conference for many years, and each time are able to bring about 20 student staff members. The conference has four block sessions, 45 minutes each, and each block has about eight choices of presenters, professional, college, and some high school journalists, advisors, and college professors, Navard said. This was the first year we were invited to present a workshop and sit on panels. When asked why it's important to him and the Oak Monitor staff members to continue to provide trusted quality journalism, Navard shared his thoughts. In today's world and today's America, news is under the microscope. So much trust has been lost, and readers come to expect bias. It is so important for today's youth to have awareness of where people are getting their news, he said. This year, Reagan Bouchard and our staff created a mission statement for our publication, which includes the concepts of truth, accuracy, integrity, and diversity. While it may simply be a daily student newspaper, we try to take our job seriously and aim to improve every day. The staff has made journalism and the Oak Monitor a key part of our school culture. Wow, sounds great. Okay, it's a little after 5:15. We'll take a short break, and Stacy will have more after this.
Would you like to hear news from Barry and Spencer that you're not likely to hear on commercial television or radio? Then tune in to Audio Journal every Monday at 6 p.m.
Welcome back to Community News for the town surrounding Fitchburg and Leominster on Audio Journal. And this is our second segment, and it's the one in which we read the obituaries from this week's papers. We'll begin with Wayne Lee Vickery, age 72, of Pepperell, passed away on May 8th, surrounded by love. Born on January 24th, 1954, in Albuquerque, he's survived by his two daughters, Jennifer A. Vickery of Gardner and Melissa M. Aubin of Pepperell. He's also survived by five grandchildren and two great-grandsons. He was predeceased by his wife of 44 years, Christina M. Vickery. And his services were Tuesday. If you'd like to make a donation, though, in Wayne's memory, you can do that to the Alpha One Foundation. Next up, and this is one from Florida, Tom H. Shields, Sr. Tom was born in Fitchburg. He was a 1957 graduate of Fitchburg High, joined the Marine Corps, and was honorably discharged. He was a huge supporter of the Marines his entire life. Tom lived in either Massachusetts or New Hampshire for 62 years. He moved to Lantana, Florida upon his retirement, and then moved to North Fort Myers with his daughter in 2020. Lifetime fan of all sports, especially Boston Red Sox and New England Patriots. Tom started his work career in the paper mills. He was in sales most of his life, working for Gerber Baby Food and Durkee Spices, and finishing his last 5 years working at the Worcester County Courthouse. Tom seemed to know everyone, according to his children. He was always quick with a joke and loved telling stories about his own escapades. Tom was a friend of Bill W. for 29 years. He enjoyed living in the warmth of Florida during the summer months. Tom is survived by his daughter, Ann Shields Proctor, sons Tom Shields Jr. and Daniel Shields. He is also survived by four grandchildren and five great-grandchildren. Tom was predeceased by his former wife, Joan Shields. A funeral mass was held this morning. Next, Bernice Lydia Crochetier, age 105, passed away on May 1st in Boston. Born on August 29th, 1920, in Ellsworth, Maine, her remarkable life spanned over a century, filled with love, family, and treasured memories. She spent much of her life in San Diego, California, where she resided for an incredible 70 years, 50 of which were shared with her beloved husband, Bill. Bernice is survived by her devoted daughter, Betty M. Boschman, and five grandchildren, eight great-grandchildren, and two great-great-grandchildren. She found joy in the simple pleasures of life. crocheting, crossword puzzles, tending to her garden, sharing laughter and stories. Bernice's strong will, wisdom, strength, and resilience were hallmarks of a life well lived, a testament to the strength of character she carried throughout her 105 years. And there's no information in this article about any services. Next, Rita E. Kinsella. Rita E. Kinsella, 89, passed away on May 11th in her home surrounded by her family. Born on January 7th, 1937, in Socorro, New Mexico, she moved to Leominster as a young child, and she would spend the remainder of her life there. Calling hours will be held on Thursday, May 21st, from 5 to 7 p.m. in the Richardson Funeral Home in Leominster. A funeral mass will be held on Friday, May 22nd at 11 in St. Anna Parish in Leominster, with burial to follow in the St. Leo Cemetery. And if you'd like more information, you can go to the website, richardsonfuneralhome.net. Moving over to Lunenburg, George L. Emmons, Jr., 83, of Lunenburg, passed away peacefully on May 4th in Sterling Village. He was a resident of Lunenburg for 60 years, where he served on the Lunenburg Board of Health and the Neshoba Associated Boards of Health. He was a salesman at the former Chapdelaine Truck Center for many years until his retirement at age 75. He's survived by his daughters, Colleen LeBlanc of Leominster, and Bonnie Cordio of Fitchburg. His wife, Carol, passed away in 2024. And if you'd like more information or to see his complete obituary, you can go to lcafh.com. At his request, there are no planned services. Now moving along to Westminster, Sharon D. Quayle LeBlanc passed away peacefully in Haywood Hospital in Gardner with her four children at her side on May 3rd. She was raised in Clinton and was a longtime resident of Westminster, where she worked alongside her husband as an assistant manager of the Westminster Country Club for many years. She was known for being helpful, kind, and friendly to all that she met. She's survived by her children, Lori Zaris, Robert LeBlanc, Thomas LeBlanc, and Michael LeBlanc. She was predeceased by her husband, Robert A. LeBlanc. And services will be Friday, May 22nd at 11 in St. Edward the Confessor Church in Westminster, and there are no calling hours. Next up, we have two obituaries, a couple who died within one day of each other. So I'm going to begin with John Hazel III, 94, of Gardner, died peacefully on Thursday, May 14th in Haywood Hospital after a brief illness. Born in Clinton on April 11, 1932, he graduated from Clinton High School in 1952, later earned an associate degree in business administration from Worcester Junior College. Pete was a corporal and squad leader in the U.S. Marine Corps Korean War era from 51 to 54, receiving several medals. He went on to have a long career as the personnel director at Burbank Hospital of Fitchburg, where he worked until his retirement. Pete was a devout Catholic and parishioner of St. Edward the Confessor Church of Westminster. Generous with his time and talent in his younger years, Pete was active in the church and several local organizations, including Special Olympics, ARC, and the Beacon of Hope. He loved adventure and being active, especially outdoors, where he enjoyed hunting, boating, and fishing. He loved golf and was a fan of football and baseball. His greatest joy was his family. He cherished the 54 years spent at the family camp in Ossipee, New Hampshire. And let's see. Pete has survived. Now pay attention, because I'm not going to read this for his wife again. They're both survived by two sons, Peter Hazel of Gardner and Kevin Hazel of Hubbardston. One daughter, Mary Beth Hamill of Center Ossipee, New Hampshire, and six grandchildren, and it says as well as several great-grandchildren. A period of visitation will be held Thursday, May 21st from 9:15 to 10 in St. Edward the Confessor Church in Westminster. A mass will follow at 10 a.m. in the church and burial to follow at St. John's Cemetery in Gardner. In lieu of flowers, you can make a contribution to St. Jude's Research Hospital or the Beacon of Hope Community Service. All right, now we are going to read his wife's obituary. Jenzy M. Hazel, 92, of Gardner, died peacefully surrounded by her family on May 15th in Haywood Hospital after a very brief illness. Born in Clinton, Mass. On October 16, 1933, she graduated from Clinton High in 51. Jenzy loved her hometown and was proud of her Apple Blossom Queen designation. She married the love of her life, John M. Hazel, in 54, after a courtship that involved daily letter writing to carry them through the Korean War. Later, Jenzy had a brief career in the secretary pool at General Electric before becoming a mother to their four children. Jenzy, like her husband, was a devout Catholic and recent parishioner of St. Edward the Confessor Church. They were active in church and local organizations, as I said, Special Olympics, ARC, and the Beacon of Hope. She loved spending time in nature, enjoying shell-collecting walks on the beach and walks in the woods with her favorite golden retrievers. So many memories with friends, neighbors, children, and grandchildren originated from Jenzy's happy place in the mountains of New Hampshire. Right? And she's survived by the same children and grandchildren that her husband is, which I read before. And looks like they're having their services at the same time. So that's visitation Thursday from 9:15 to 10 in St. Edward the Confessor. And then the Mass at 10 a.m. and burial at St. John's Cemetery. And like her husband, you can make a contribution to St. Jude's Research Hospital or the Beacon of Hope Community Service in Leominster. All right, there. That is all for the obituaries today. Let's see if I can read a brief article before we need to go on to our next break. It's from Leominster. Local business owner talks tech policy with lawmakers. Small business owner Neil Abramson recently met with federal lawmakers in Washington to advocate for business-friendly tech policies. The visit came ahead of National Small Business Week, May 3rd to 9th, where the CFO of Leominster-based ECI Stores called for balanced policies that promote small business success. During the meeting with U.S. Representative Jim McGovern's office, Abramson advocated for balanced tech policies that help small businesses like his succeed in the current uncertain economic climate, specifically raising concerns that proposals to restrict the use of data, AI, and digital tools could make it harder for small businesses to reach customers, to operate efficiently, and grow. I appreciated the opportunity to meet with Representative McGovern's staff to share how small businesses like mine use digital tools. Abramson was one of 34 small business leaders from across the country who traveled to the Capitol to interact with dozens of elected officials and staff. It's inspiring to see small business leaders like Neil take the time to share their real-world experiences directly with lawmakers, said Connected Commerce Council Executive Director Ram Retzlaff. Their perspectives help ensure policy decisions reflect how digital tools are actually used by small businesses across the country. All right. It's coming up to 4:30, so we're going to take a break, and then Priscilla will have more news for you when we come back.
Did you know that there are many different ways to listen to Audio Journal? You can go to our website, audiojournal.org, and stream us live. Or you can install the Audio Journal app on your iPhone or iPad. Or you can tell your smart speaker to play radio station Audio Journal on TuneIn. Or you can dial us at 1-712-770-1043 on your telephone. Or you can turn on your local cable access TV station. You can check our website, audiojournal.org, for the correct channel for your town. And finally, you can use one of our special receivers tuned to Audio Journal's frequency. And if you missed your favorite program, go to our website or the Audio Journal app and listen to podcasts of previously aired programs. Now, if you need assistance with any of these listening methods, please contact us at 508-797-1117 or email info@audiojournal.org. Audio Journal is a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
We're back with more news from the Fitchburg-Lemonster area on Audio Journal. Here's from Townsend. Townsend to observe Memorial Day on Sunday. Memorial Day will be observed in Townsend on Sunday, May 24th, and members of the Townsend VFW and American Legion posts and their auxiliaries will attend a 10 a.m. service at the Congregational Church in Townsend as a body. Two parades and a band concert will take place in the afternoon. All marching units will assemble at the VFW Park in West Townsend at 1 p.m. Reverend Ronald Sylvester will offer the invocation at the memorial service to be held there at 1:30 p.m. before the veterans groups, accompanied by the Townsend Military Band, the Townsend Fire and EMS Department, the Townsend Minuteman Company, members of the clergy, town officials, and numerous scout and other community groups, march east on Main Street to Canal Street. Flowers will be strewn upon the water from a decorated boat during the memorial service at the Canal Street Bridge in honor of those who lost their lives at sea. Pastor Jeff Willett will offer the prayer during the service at the bridge. Following the bridge service, all units will proceed to the Riverside Cemetery for a memorial service. Pastor Willett will give the invocation. The Townsend Military Band will play a hymn. Volleys will be fired by the American Legion Post No. 199 firing squad, and taps will be played. The parade will disband after leaving the cemetery to later reform in front of the Spalding Memorial School in Townsend Center. At approximately 2:35 p.m., the Townsend Minuteman Company will fire a salute at the Bicentennial Monument in front of the school before the marching units move down Turnpike Road to the Main Street Bridge. Those who lost their lives at sea will also be honored during the Main Street Bridge Memorial Service, with flowers being strewn upon the water from a decorated boat. Reverend Dr. Gregory Schmidt will offer the invocation at the bridge. Following the service at the bridge, the marchers will parade to Memorial Hall for a memorial service. Reverend Dr. Schmidt will offer the invocation at Memorial Hall. The parade will then pass around the common and go to the Hillside Cemetery for a memorial service where Father Sean Maher will offer the prayer. The Freemasons of the Grand of Massachusetts, who will join the parade at the school, will separate from the other marchers at the cemetery so they may conduct a special memorial service at the grave of Henry Price, the founder of Masonry in America. After leaving the cemetery, the parade will move down Highland Street to Brookline Street and into the Townsend Common. Father Sean Maher will give the invocation during the memorial service on the Common, which will be followed by the presentation of the Gettysburg Address by a Boy Scout and Flanders Field by a Girl Scout. The parade will disband after the memorial service at the Civil War Monument on the Common. Townsend's Memorial Day observances will continue as the Townsend Military Band plays a concert on the Common beginning approximately 15 minutes after the parade's conclusion. Patriotic music and the songs of the various military branches will be performed before the Townsend Military Band concludes its Memorial Day concert at approximately 5 p.m. by playing the Star-Spangled Banner. The Townsend Memorial Day observances will be held rain or shine. It is hoped that many area residents will come out to watch the ceremonies. All veterans and active military, with or without a uniform, and or members of their families, are encouraged to march with the American Legion, veterans of foreign wars, and disabled American veteran members, and to join them in honoring all deceased comrades. Okay. And okay, here's Sally Cragen's Pet Talk column, titled "Plant Safe Plants for Cats. Some plants can be dangerous." Dear Pet Talk, I love plants, but I need to know what plants are safe to have around indoor kitties. Are there plants to avoid that would be harmful to a cat if they ate them? And it's signed Cat Mama Gardener. Dear Cat Mama Gardener, there are plenty of plants that are harmless, so let's focus on those first. According to Amber Battinger, veterinary technician who is also the public relations and communications manager at Embrace Pet Insurance, safe options include spider plants, Boston ferns, areca palms, and calatheas. I'm not sure what that is, but I always tell people that non-toxic doesn't necessarily mean your cat won't chew on it, though, so placement still matters. Cats are naturally curious and tend to explore with their mouths, so even safe plants should be kept in spots where you can monitor them. Recently, I wanted to start some spider plants from the runners and found that every single leaf on the spider plant, which was at waist height on its own planter, had been chewed, probably by our orange cat, Vinny. He would have to stand on his tippy toes to do the job he did, so now I'm looking for a high shelf. We also looked for gardening specialists and found Anoop Mudalik, chief editor at Houseplants Nook. Her qualifications are that we're seven people in a Brooklyn brownstone with hundreds of houseplants and three cats. Okay. She has done extensive research on toxicity of houseplants, cross-referenced with ASPCA data. Houseplant Nook has created a variety of lists, including cat toxicity chart for 50 popular houseplants and indoor plants not toxic to cats. You could visit houseplants.nook and have fun exploring. The most dangerous plants to have in your home, if you also have a green-seeking cat, are Peace Lily, Pothos, and True Lilies. These plants are linked to kidney damage with repeated exposure. So why do cats seek out greens and then erp them up? One theory is that because cats don't have the right enzymes to digest greens, eating grass will help them vomit the indigestible parts of prey. Remember, a cat's diet in the wild is a lot of fish and bird sushi without the rice. Cats will eat bones, fur, and feathers. Yet why do house cats, who get lovely pre-processed prey in a can, continue this practice? Perhaps cats are pre-programmed to eat something green if they have a tummy ache. Cats' grass helps them eliminate fur from a swallowed hairball from the other end, so to speak. What plants are okay for cats? Here's a list of plants you can grow indoors that are suggested by PetMD.com. Wheat berries and barley grass will go quickly, and catnip and cat thyme are stress relievers. But if your kitty persists in nibbling spider plant or your lucky bamboo, consider hanging planters. Always a good idea, yes. And let's see. His under the music category, this from Lunenburg, Sean Fullerton brings jangle rock sound to Lunenburg. The unmistakable jangle of 1960s folk rock will take center stage when musician Sean Fullerton brings his lively program, Rick 12, the guitar of jangle rock, to the community. The concert will be held at 6 p.m. Thursday, May 28th at the Lunenburg Public Library, 1023 Massachusetts Avenue. Designed as both a performance and an interactive experience, the program invites attendees to sing along to classic hits from bands such as The Beatles, The Who, The Beach Boys, and The Monkees, among others. At the heart of the presentation is the distinctive Rickenbacker 12-string electric guitar, often referred to as the Rick 12, whose bright, chiming tone helped define the rock-folk movement of the 1960s. First brought into the spotlight by the Beatles during the era of A Hard Day's Night, and later popularized by the Byrds, the instrument became a signature sound that continues to influence music today. Fullerton's program will blend live performance with storytelling, offering historical insights, humorous anecdotes, and a closer look at the craftsmanship and legacy of the Rickenbacker guitar. Backed by tracks he produced himself, Fullerton recreates a full band sound while maintaining a comfortable volume suited for all audiences. A Massachusetts-based musician, singer-songwriter, recording engineer, and producer with 30 years of professional experience, Fullerton is known for his engaging, audience-friendly style. He specializes in blues, soul, rock and roll, folk, Irish, and instrumental, classical, and fingerstyle guitar. He performs throughout New England. Performing music for people and knowing that it brings back fond memories for them through each song is beyond description, Fullerton said. I get to do what I love for a living, and I let the audience be a part of the show by encouraging participation, by singing along, dancing, whatever the music moves them to do. It's really amazing, which really isn't a strong enough word to describe that experience. The concert is funded by the Lunenburg Cultural Council, support by the Mass Cultural Council. For more information on this or other library events, visit the library's website at lunenburglibrary.org. And for additional information on Sean Fullerton, visit seanfullertonmusic.net. Okay. And let's see. From Mount Wachusett Community College, Credit Union Employees Graduate Leadership Program. This from Gardner. 30 employees from All One Credit Union in Leominster and GFA Credit Union in Gardner received completed Mount Wachusett Community College 75-hour first-line supervisor training program, strengthening the leadership capacity across the region's financial services workforce. Designed for newly promoted supervisors, the intensive program equips participants with practical skills such as communication, emotional intelligence, project management, and team leadership, critical competencies for navigating today's fast-paced workplace. Since its launch in 2019, MWCC's first line supervisor, that's Mount Wachusett Community College, first line supervisor program has become a cornerstone of workforce development in north central Massachusetts, helping organizations build strong internal leadership pipelines while improving employee retention and performance. Both credit unions partnered with MWCC to secure funding through the Commonwealth of Massachusetts Workforce Training Fund program, enabling them to invest in employee development with minimal financial burden. With a strong emphasis on leadership, communication, and team building, the program empowered participants to build confidence, elevate their management skills, and continue to step forward as more effective leaders, said Ellen Coughlin, SVP Human Resources and Development, All One Credit Union. The program reflects a broader commitment among local employers to develop talent from within and prepare the next generation of leaders in the region. As we continue to develop leaders at every level of the organization, we create a culture that is more connected, supportive, and aligned in serving our members and communities in meaningful ways, said Mark Hettinger, CEO, GFA Federal Credit Union. Participants also highlighted the immediate value of the training in their day-to-day roles. Over the 12 weeks, it gave me real practical leadership tools that I didn't just learn. I actually use them every single day, said Kate Green, Member Relationship Assistant Manager, All One Credit Union. Since finishing the course, I've had 2 promotions, and I truly feel the confidence, mindset, and skills I have built there played a big part in that role, that growth. It's been empowering in the best way, and it's made me a stronger, more intentional leader for my team. Applications for the open enrollment class starting September 11th are now being accepted at mwcc.edu/firstlinesupervisor. Additionally, interested companies can have a dedicated class delivered to their staff. Contact Christine Asselin, Senior Manager of Corporate Training at MWCC, with questions at casselin@mwcc.mass.edu. Okay, sounds like fun. Anyway, we're coming up on 4:45, time to take our last break, and Stacy will be back to finish up the hour.
When my dad started to lose his vision, we were worried. Sure, his doctor gave me and my mom some handouts, and I did my fair share of research. But we had no idea how much of a challenge vision loss would be or how it would impact his quality of life. That's why I was so glad we discovered Mass Commission for the Blind. They work with my dad, and they will work with you and your loved one as well to develop future plans and new skills and assistive technology. They even helped Dad get access to talking books and newspapers. He was so excited.
If your loved one is blind or visually impaired, find out if they are eligible to register for services. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB. That's 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.
Welcome back to the last segment of Community News for Fitchburg and Leominster and the surrounding areas on Audio Journal. And let's begin with this article. Library receives restoration grant. This is from Fitchburg. A 3500 Freedoms Way National Heritage Area matching grant for the Fitchburg Public Library's capital campaign was recently announced. The money will be used toward restoration and stabilization of the 1885 stained glass city seal removed from the old library building. Freedom Way's National Heritage Area's intention to invest in historical resources will partially fund the work to preserve the historic Venetian and antique stained glass windows. Facilitators of the capital campaign encourage community members to donate to the campaign to help fulfill the 2-to-1 match this grant requires. Participation will allow community members the opportunity to help restore this cultural and historic resource at no cost to the city. The library is in the midst of a transformative $40 million renovation and expansion project designed to serve the community's changing needs. The project includes stabilizing the stained glass city seal, which was originally above the front door of the 1885 Wallace Library. In the 1967 building, the stained glass seal had been installed on the east end of the clerestory windows. The seal, a 51.5-inch diameter circle encased in a wood frame, was removed from the construction project, and it has been determined that the construction is intact but very fragile. Stabilization involves cleaning, repairing the glass and wood frame, and reinforcing the overall structure. When complete, this unique piece of Fitchburg's history will be displayed and backlit in the new lobby of the Newton Place entrance. Freedom's Way National Heritage Area, out of Devens, serves as facilitator, host, and guide for heritage area-wide presentations, activities, and initiatives that recognize and preserve the unique identity of the area. If you'd like more information, you can visit freedomsway.org, or you can visit fitchburgpubliclibrary.org and click on the building project link. All right, and more about a building project. It's entitled Ready for Our Rebirth. The Salvation Army Fitchburg Corps was a flurry of activity on Friday afternoon with the announcement of a capital campaign that will provide funding for a brand new headquarters building. "We are hoping the donations will come," said longtime Salvation Army envoy Lynette Valentine Warren to the large crowd gathered at 739 Water Street. She reported that over the last couple of years, they've been able to raise $1.5 million toward the $2 million they are responsible for when it comes to the project. With the Salvation Army Territorial Headquarters agreeing to cover the remaining $3 million. "The need has been there much longer," Valentine Warren said, noting that they appreciate every single dollar coming in. The plan for the new 8,000-square-foot building that will provide 50% more space than the current 50-Zera facility has been in the making for years. "No gift is too small," Valentine Warren said. She detailed a lot of what they do on a daily basis to help those in community: financial assistance, emergency disaster services, holiday meals and toys, and a whole lot more, including youth and music programs and a food pantry that regularly feeds upwards of 4 dozen families each week. "Most of all, we thank our community," she said, before inviting Community Foundation President Steve Adams to speak. "What a great day to be in Fitchburg," he said, saying that the Salvation is one of the organizations that holds the community together. He noted that the new headquarters will enable them to expand their hours and programs, and gave the Salvation Army crew credit for their refusal to let the limitations of a building limit whom they serve. "Fitchburg is really ready to build something worthy of who they serve," Adams said. State Senator John Cronin's constituent service director, Beth Walsh, said that she receives a lot of phone calls from people in need, and that oftentimes afterwards, her first call is to the Salvation Army. She talked about a family with 3 children going from hotel to hotel, and when she called the Salvation for assistance, they came through. "The entire family was in tears," Walsh said. Valentine Warren stated that's what their entire mission is, to serve anyone in the community in need. "We have a building to build. We have a community to take care of," she said. "Something we will have is a legacy." All right. Well, let's see. We can get started by this article by Sally Cragen. Spring produce is coming in, and smart shoppers will head to the farmers markets in Leominster at City Hall on Thursday, May 21st, 4 to 6 p.m., Westminster Farmers Market on Fridays, 3 to 6 p.m., and Lunenburg Artisan Market on Sundays, 9 to 2 p.m. Actual markets with farm produce in the North Central region include Leominster's Go Farm, Fitchburg's Hollis Hills, Lunenburg's Lonnie's, Dix, and Stillman's. Supporting local farmers means supporting your neighbors. And farmland is precious. Back in the 1990s, when I was writing for the Boston Globe, I spoke to a state specialist in dairy farms who told me that the rule of thumb is that every 10 years, there are half as many dairy farms. Currently, there are 39 listed on the Mass Department of Agriculture map, 49 organic farms, but 286 community-supported agriculture farms. These are farms where consumers can purchase a share of the harvest in advance, which guarantees a variety of produce boxes throughout the season. CSAs support farmers and consumers, and we'll be reporting about area CSAs as the season progresses. Well, that's great. Let me see. We've got just another moment or two. So I think we'll read some of these fun facts to know and tell about today in history. On this day in 1862, President Lincoln signed the Homestead Act, which was intended to encourage settlement west of the Mississippi River by making federal land available for private ownership and farming. In 1873, Levi Strauss and Jacob Davis obtained a U.S. patent for putting rivets in men's work pants to prevent wear and tear, leading to a large-scale production of denim blue jeans. On this day in 1937, Charles Lindbergh took off from Long Island, New York, aboard the Spirit of St. Louis on his historic solo flight to Paris. He completed the first solo, nonstop transatlantic flight of more than 3,600 miles in just over 33 hours. In 1932, Amelia Earhart departed from Newfoundland to become the first woman to fly solo across the Atlantic. Because of weather and equipment problems, she landed the following day in Northern Ireland instead of her intended destination, France. On this date in 1956, the United States exploded the first airborne hydrogen bomb over Bikini Atoll in the Pacific. On this date in 1961, a white mob attacked a bus carrying freedom riders in Montgomery, Alabama, prompting the federal government to send in U.S. Marshals to restore order. And let's see, I guess that's it for this day in history. Our time is just about up for today. This program is intended... I'm reading the opening. We've already heard that. Here's the closing. This community news program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like to have a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, you can call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or you can go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm Stacey Lanier. I've been reading today with Priscilla Lanigan. Stay tuned to more community news for Southbridge, Sturbridge, and Charlton. Thank you for listening.
This is Bird Note. What a lovely song! The very sound of spring. A mellow, burbled refrain from the edge of a meadow. A shimmer of blue against the still wintry landscape confirms our eager hope. An eastern bluebird has just returned north. A male bluebird stands atop a wooden nest box attached to a fence post. He's an eastern bluebird, a small thrush, and he gleams deep blue with a rusty orange breast. The bluebird's song and his alert presence assert his claim to this territory. But an intruder, a tree swallow, dives toward the nest box. With a rough chatter and raised wings, the bluebird warns the swallow away. Bluebirds rely on nest boxes. In the mid-20th century, their numbers in the Northeast declined to the lowest level ever, due largely to nesting competition from non-native starlings and house sparrows. Conservation groups stepped up, setting out bluebird trails of nest boxes built just right for these beautiful birds. Eastern bluebirds have rebounded, and we can still count on them to welcome the arrival of spring. This episode is brought to you by Wild Delight Bird Food, which aims to support wild bird populations with clean, nutritious ingredients in every blend. Available at Chewy.com.
Are you interested in taking the bus but aren't sure how? Let the Worcester Regional Transit Authority make it easier for you. The WRTA Travel Training Program is designed to help people who would like to use the regular WRTA fixed route bus service but aren't sure where to begin. You can receive instruction on a one-on-one basis, or you may bring a friend or relative and do it together. You decide. You will learn how to read a schedule, understand transit terminology, pay your fare, where to purchase tickets, what to do in case of an emergency, and all things having to do with learning to use public transit. If there is a particular route or routes that you would like to use, the travel trainer will tailor the training to meet your needs. Travel training is free of charge, and while you are with the travel trainer, your trips are free as well. Please call 508-453-3460 to set up an appointment today.
You are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.